This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome Ken McElroy back to the show. He's a man who doesn't even need an introduction. He's so well known in real estate circles. He's written several of the books in the Rich Dad Advisor series. You hear him with Robert Kiyosaki from time to time doing his thing, and just a great educator, great friend. He's spoken at a couple of our events and been on the show many times before, and owns like 832 million apartment units, or at least the number somewhat close to that, but not exact number. Ken, welcome back. How you doing?
Hi, Jason. What's going on, man? It's great to be back on your show.
Hey, it's good to talk to you again. It's always good to talk to you. And man, the world feels like it's in chaos, doesn't it? Doesn't it?
It is. That's why it feels that way.
You know, you can either laugh or cry about some of this stuff. So let's try and laugh about it. But, you know, it's all changing so fast. We don't want to make this too time specific. And, you know, one of the things I'm always telling my listeners and viewers and followers is to just get a context and understand how much life has changed in the past 10, 20, 30, 40 years, not even that many years. Just watch old movies, watch old TV shows. And, you know, one that comes to mind that I like is Columbo, that old detective show. Remember Columbo?
Sure.
He was a funny guy, Columbo, and really smart. But, you know, what's interesting about that is when we talk about how this wealth gap is increasing, you know, you look around and when there'd be like a rich person that Columbo would be involved, you know, would be a suspect involved in a crime, and he would go to their house, their mansion in the 70s was nothing like a mansion is today, right? And you can just tell how much wealthier the wealthy are becoming. They are becoming mega, mega oligarchical wealthy. And we were talking about these tech companies and so forth. What do you think about this? Is it a problem? And if so, can we do anything about it?
I think it is. You know, like you and I, I've traveled all over the world. I know you have. And so I know a lot of probably your listeners have. And when you go to places outside of the United States, there's a massive divide between the rich and the poor. It's super clear there. I think the U.S. Up to this point has done a pretty good job of trying to maintain a middle class. But boy, that's changing quickly now, that's for sure. And, you know, I would expect, based on, you know, not following any political lines here, but I would expect that the tech companies are going to be, I said this the other day to a friend of mine, that we're probably going to see those get broken up, you know, just like they did to Rockefeller and Standard Oil back in the day.
Or AT&T more recently.
Yeah. So I would imagine that you'll start to see that, you know, legislation around that. And in fact, I've seen some Democrats talk about that recently. You know, I think all of those things we'll see in the next 10 years. And it's just going to continue.
Yeah, we'll see.
Whether it's Democrat or Republican, I was buying apartments in real estate all through all this stuff. And I said, right. you know who really hurt my business was Bush when he, you know, made housing cheap and, you know, and everybody went out and started buying it. Or I shouldn't say cheap. He said everybody should own a home. So Everybody started doing that. And so home ownership went way up, which is completely fine.
Right.
I don't disagree with that philosophy. But then Obama kind of had the You know, he had the effects of that bust, you know, that housing bust. And so, and Clinton rolled out some great policies around, people that needed money and that's, socially. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I think the lesson there is, and I'm so glad you said that, Ken, because the lesson is that you can make money in any environment if you just adjust your strategy accordingly, right? And income property really is such a flexible asset class where you can adjust to how you're playing the game, right? So that's really good. But the other little nugget that I want to make sure people realize in what you just said is that most people think that you want to have this booming housing market to make money, but that's actually wrong. If you're a landlord and you depend on rental income, it's better if there's a higher renter population than a homeowner population. And you just said that.
Yeah, no, that happened. I specifically remember home ownership. It was right around 62%. And with Bush, it went all the way up to like 68 or 69%. Again, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But then from there, it popped. And then it went all the way back down. And then so now it's kind of gone all the way back up. So, and at the time, there was a metric. It was like for every 1%, it was a million people or something like that.
That's the metric. It's a million new renters for every 1% decline in the home ownership rate. Yeah. So under Bush, it got up to like 69% or some ridiculous number like that, which is people in real estate think this is like sacrilege when I say this, Ken, but I think the home ownership rate is too high. I think the natural home ownership rate, even with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but not overt stimulus, is about 50 to 55%. That's where it should be.
If you look around the world, it's low.
Yeah.
When you go to Europe or, anywhere in Australia or Asia, it's low. It's a lot lower. And so there is a point where there's a rental piece there. And what influences it is policy. And Bush was a Republican. So, he was like, everybody needs their own house, which is, again, totally fine. But then you're like, okay, well, what they're doing is we had renters moving out, buying houses. And that's what created that bubble. And then that popped. And then, Obama had to kind of clean up that. And, and then once that guy got cleaned up, that was the run we just had. No one was building apartments during that time. No one's building new housing during that time because everything was, massively disrupted. And so that's the run we just got done with. It was longer than everybody thought it was going to be, but it was regardless, it popped, as in 07, 08. And this has been a 12, 13 year run that we just had.
Yeah, it has. Now, as Trump came in 2016, 17, everybody was kind of talking back then about how, it's the end of the business cycle. This thing is long in the tooth, this recovery, and I kind of postulated at the time that, look, we were coming off such a low that the cycle really didn't start until about 2012. It didn't start in 2008, as some were kind of saying.
No way.
Go ahead.
No, yeah. No, I was buying stuff in 08, 09, and 10. I was buying it for 50 cents on the dollar, 40, and we were buying stuff from banks at that price. And so that, banks were trying to get all this toxic debt off of their balance sheet
right
at that time. It did not start to accelerate. I agree with you. It did not start to really accelerate until 12, 13, 14. I actually thought we were going to peak out around 2016. I was way off.
Yeah.
I was way off.
Well, at least you admit it.
because I was like, oh my gosh, like prices are really heating up here. But then they started using these monetary policies and driving rates down,
right,
which is what kept it going. So we actually, if you really look, we actually hit kind of a ceiling on values in real estate in the, call it the mid 2015, 2016s. And then the cost of debt went way down and then it pushed it up because your cash flow, maybe your rates at 4.5 and your in 2015 values. Well, if the rate goes to 3.5, then your value goes up because your cash flow is the same. So that's what kept, you know, this next piece, that next run we had was, from the monetary policy of keeping those rates low.
Right, right. Give us some of your thoughts on, you know, how you find deal flow. And your average deal size, by the way, it's pretty big. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, how you find deals and how you evaluate them and average deal size even before that.
So I just actually had this conversation. Our deals 10 years ago were, call it $15, $20 million. Mm-hmm. Now they're $35 to $50 million. And that's because of the prices have gone up so much. The interesting thing is debt's gone down, risks have gone up. So oddly enough, they still make sense. So, yeah. But the amount of money that you have to have, the equity down and the debt you have to have is a lot more. So before we were raising, call it 7, 8, 9, 10 million per deal. Now, we're 20 per deal. Literally, our equity's doubled, and which is okay, but it's just an interesting note that needs to be discussed. So, deals are tough to find right now for multiple reasons. One, people are moving all over the place. Maybe their jobs have decided that they can do that from somewhere else, and they can work from home. That's one way. Or maybe that job is completely gone, or maybe their taxes are really high and maybe they're just moving 20, 30, 40 miles away and they're commuting in or whatever it is. So things are moving quickly right now. And so the big mystery is, when all this settles, what businesses are going to still be open, what ones are going to be closed, and what employers are going to allow people to work completely remotely or, maybe part-time remotely. All that stuff is still a mystery. And there's a lot of big names that have said, never come back, it's all going to be remote. So it's going to completely change the landscape for office buildings and all that kind of stuff downtown and restaurants and coffee shops and, all those kinds of places. So all that's changing. And that's only to say we're trying to figure out where the concentration of people are going to be so that we can buy there. And so my acquisition guys, they're flying to these different markets right now and taking a look at some of the stress points around that. And typically those show up pretty easily. When you have a property, let's say that's 98-99% with a waiting list, that there's a supply issue.
So the supply is weak, right?
Right. Yeah, supply is weak and demand is strong. So and then you might particularly have growth there. And then you've got to look at, do you really want to buy more there? Do you really want to build more there? So we're looking in throughout most of the markets in Texas, trying to be careful of Austin. We're already there. We're already in Houston. We're already in San
Antonio. Why do you say be careful of Austin?
Well, because the market's
too expensive.
I'm very, very high. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I agree.
And so rents, but also there's a lot of employers going there. There's a lot of people moving there. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's at the top, but you do what, we owned stuff there 10 years ago. And so for us, it's doubled. And so you have to take a look at, rents have not doubled. I can tell you that. So, all those things kind of play into that, but basically it's boots on the ground, what's happening, and it can be submarket to submarket. So you can go, even in Phoenix is where I live now, we have areas that are just going like this crazy good, and we have areas that are not, kind of based on what's happening with employers in the area. I'll give you an example. I was on a call yesterday with all my regional property managers, and we went through, basically it was a 5-hour call. We were going every single budget on every single property, the 2021 budgets. And that's also when I find out a lot of stuff because I'm on the phone with my managers. And, like in Flagstaff, one of the big employers is about ready to shut down. So small market, I own property there. Those are things that are starting to show up. And so you got to kind of be careful of that because when you have an employer in an area that is not doing well or potentially maybe closing down, maybe not the company, but just an area, a region, a distribution center or whatever it is, as they try to figure out a way to save money, those are real estate issues. And, They stop buying groceries. They stop buying houses. They stop.
Right.
Those are and they move. And so those are all the things that we're trying to figure out right now, Jason. And it's hard. I mean, and everybody's doing the same thing. We're bidding on. So I'm bidding on a property right now. Actually, it's due in a week, and it's about a $56 million deal. There's 45 groups
that are bidding on it.
Yes.
So while these numbers, your deals are so big, everybody probably says, I can't wait to be in the big leagues like Ken. That's awesome. But there, you're competing against 44 or 45 other buyers.
Yes.
Wow.
It's going to be interesting. So, but that's, I'm used to that. That's the way it is. It's very, very common for us to have, I mean, when, you know, the data and the information and the groups out there syndicating money and the groups out there with funds and family offices and private equity and all that stuff has never been stronger, especially because think about this. Let's say you were in retail, and I know you're not in retail, but let's say you were.
Retail properties, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not going to do that now. So you're going to go, okay, I'm going to do industrial or multifamily. And so, Okay, so that's what happens in the commercial arena because money's money.
So the money is just flowing from one asset class to the other.
So when everything's going well, when retail's going well and malls are going well,
it stays there.
Yeah, it kind of stays where it is. There's less competition. But when a whole sector like retail or malls, as you know, or hospitality or hotels.
And office. Yeah.
An office. Yeah. There. You know, what it does is it moves to other things. And that's what's happening now.
But Ken, so there's certainly this move from retail and office type properties to housing. And I've always loved housing. I always say housing, 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 you know, and you like housing too, obviously. And that's great. But just in general, you know, I was talking with one of our clients today. And, you know, they want to buy some more single family houses, which is our thing. And, you know, they were saying, gosh, it seems like everything is just so expensive right now. You know, real estate, Bitcoin, the stock market, it's just like every asset is just pumped, pumped, pumped. And you know, I said to him, I said, look, you've got to just realize that the world, there is just so much money sloshing around out there. It is absolutely amazing. And I think one of the reasons is that's maybe not that discussed that often is that nobody can earn any yield in the more traditional things like a savings account, a CD. You can't do it in bonds. So it has all come in to other assets like real estate and certainly the stock market and crypto. You know, all this money is just looking for a place for yield. It's, you know, as the saying goes, it's seeking alpha. Right.
Yeah.
So what do you say to that?
Great timing on this one, because I called Kiyosaki the other day. You know, we talk almost every day, and he takes a call and he's like, hey, let me call you back. I go, okay. He's like, I'm on the phone with a financial planner. Okay. That's something I never thought I would hear from Robert ever.
Oh, that is surprising, right? Because in other words, because he's not a stock market guy. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, I was laughing. He called me back like 20 minutes later and I go, dude, I thought I would never hear that from you ever.
Right?
Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm on the phone with a financial planner, but he was, and there was a cool conversation. The guy basically said, we have a problem. I have thousands of clients that are sitting on millions of dollars each, in some case, a million, two, three, four, 5 million, whatever, in net worth. And they've been working their whole lives and they're making a pretty good salary. And their issue is that if they stop making the salary, that money isn't making money.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're looking at whatever they've saved and they're trying to figure out a way to get cash flow because, you know, they have a burn rate, they have a living expenses. And let's say they're, you know, let's say it's $50,000 a year that they need. That comes out of their principal.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue was the guy was talking to him about, you know, what do you suggest, Robert? Because my clients are looking for some kind of cash flow and something that isn't necessarily in a bubble. And so it was an interesting perspective because I think the guy very wisely was asking the question for on behalf of his clients and trying to, because how do you replace $200,000 or $100,000 a year job that's paying your monthly burn rate and you're used to putting that money away in savings and then it's gone. And now you're living off of savings or living off the earnings from that savings. And so that was the issue. And I think that's happening right now, even more so.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, money's just looking for a place to go. You know, it's interesting, too, because years ago, back in 2004, when I started teaching my Creating Wealth seminar, I found this article, and it was actually a report by Michael Milken. Everybody knows his name. and Jeremy Siegel, another name that's pretty well known in financial circles. And it was so fascinating, Ken, because Jeremy Siegel in there, I used to quote him all the time because he was talking about globalization and how it's lifted, you know, 300 million people out of poverty. And there's this like rising middle class around the world. And sadly, the middle class is diminishing in America, but it's definitely rising around the world, right? China and India and so forth. Yep. And he says, with all of these people suddenly coming into the investor class, he didn't say it exactly this way, I'm paraphrasing, but you know, this was the gist of it. With all of these people now coming into like middle class life and then people above them getting truly wealthy, I mean, Chinese people, Indian people, and others, you know, there's a looming asset shortage. He says, where are all the assets for these people to buy? Right. Where, like, you know, and I think we're seeing that now. And, you know, this was a report from almost 20 years ago. And now we've seen more globalization, more people lifted out of poverty. And we see there is really an asset shortage. I mean, look, you're bidding on an apartment complex and you got 45 other institutional buyers against you in this deal, right?
That's true. Yeah, it's absolutely true. Well, part of that is because people believe in the short and long term rental space. Mm-hmm. You know, as this economy continues to unravel and employment, you know, shows its, you know, shows the card that the businesses finally settle out and everything's figured out. More people should roll into rentals, and as a result of the forbearance and the mortgage defaults and all the things along that line, whether it's a commercial investor or whether it's a business investor or whether it's a single family home owner, it doesn't really matter. You're going to start to see, I think you're going to see a lot of pressure, positive pressure on the rental market.
In other words, a lot more rental demand as people move out of the ownership market. You mean like a declining home ownership rate, right?
It happened before. It's happened a ton of times. Everybody can look at this. Look at 08. That is exactly what happened. Now, it was a little different, of course. The home values went down and, you know, they were below what they owed. And so this is a little different where people owe, they have pretty good equity in their home, but they still owe money. And they may or may not have work. And so I think, as I keep telling you, I believe that we're going to see a lot of listings next year or this year now, I guess. And we're going to see an inventory as people try to clean up some of that, whatever it is, that money that they owe, because we have a debt issue. That's the issue everywhere. If you own a hotel, it's a debt issue. If you own a home, it's a debt issue. If you own a student loan, it's a debt issue. If you own credit cards, it's a debt issue. It's all around debt. So, and when the money dries up, if you own a hotel and occupancy is down, there's no money. So you have a debt issue.
Yeah, hotels have been suffering like crazy. I mean, we didn't mention hospitality too much before. We said retail and office, but hospitality is terrible. That's in the tank, right?
It's in trouble. Yeah. I get these things called the TREP report, TREPP. You should check it out. Uh-huh. It's all about, debt and mortgage, commercial mortgage defaults and by sector. And the hotel industry is in big trouble. I mean, I was looking at, I think, well, Miami, Chicago, New York, you know, we're talking about all 50, 60, 70% in default.
Wow, that's just incredible. And okay, so there's a couple things we got to unpack from what you just said. And since we're on this one now, and I want to go back in a moment to something you said before, but since we're on this one, I've been talking just a little bit, not enough, about the CMBS market, commercial mortgage-backed securities. And I think this is one of the next big dominoes to kind of fall, because the residential mortgage-backed securities are pretty good. I mean, there's some forbearance in the system. I don't think it's anything big, but you might disagree with me, so you feel free to comment on that. It's definitely out there. There are certainly some people struggling, no question about it. But the commercial mortgage-backed security market, I mean, there's a lot of defaults going on in retail, office, and hospitality type of properties. You know, they have bondholders, they have investors behind that. You know, what happens with that domino effect?
Well, you're right on. I've been talking about CMBS a bit. And, you know, in 08, it was the single family residential kind of bust. And not that there weren't some commercial too, but that was kind of the focus, that movie, The Big Short, all of that. So people that don't know, when you get a mortgage, that it gets packaged up with a bunch of mortgages and sold off into the secondary market. And CMBS is the same thing. It's commercial mortgage-backed securities. And so they're all packed into, you know, these bigger, you know, with these bigger investors, and they're in people's portfolios for sure. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, which ones do default. It's definitely going to make its way, and these investors, I think you're going to see big disruption in this area.
So what does that mean? I mean, these bondholders, you know, the property owner defaults on their office building or their shopping center or their hotel, then the bondholders don't get paid. And who are those bondholders? Are they, you know, the Harvard endowment? Are they pension plans, insurance companies, all of the above? And what happens there?
They're all of those people. Yes. And so for people who don't know, when I'm going out to buy, let's say $100 or $200 million worth of commercial real estate in the multifamily space, I'm going to those groups. You know, it might be through Goldman Sachs. It might be through Blackstone. It might be through, you know, a couple other different groups, but those folks are managing massive amounts of money, and they're looking for guys like us that can place it for them. That's how the system works. So the Harvard Endowment, as an example, or CalPERS, the California Retirement
Fund. Yeah.
All those are just managed money. That's real money from real people. And then those money managers go out and look for guys like us. Mm-hmm. And they say, hey, we like Phoenix Multifamily. We're gonna go out and talk to Ken at MC because, you know, they have a pipeline. I actually have a call on this tomorrow. And so that's how the system works. And then what happens is, wherever that money went, if it went into a self-storage or an office building or a retail or even a regional mall, and that's the kind of money that bought those things, that as they default, the people, let's say people inside of a mall can't pay anymore, well, the owner of that mall can't pay. And all of a sudden, it's just a trickle effect that makes it all the way down into that portfolio of whoever lent that money from the beginning.
So connected to that is the looming fear, and I think this is going to be big, and I don't think enough people are talking about it, not even close, but there is not a U.S. problem, not a state problem, but it's a global pension crisis. You know, we have, I don't know, maybe a couple billion people, like it's a big number, okay, who are sort of kicking back thinking, you know, I'm 45 years old and 20 years, I'm going to retire and have my pension. And I think they are going to be, they're in for a rude awakening, sadly.
I'm telling you, it's a really good point, Jason. Robert Kiyosaki just wrote a book. It's called Who Stole My Pension? Mm-hmm. And I was looking for it on my bookshelf here. Yep. With a guy that does whistleblowing for pensions. And you're right. People are sitting there. Again, it's the same system, guys. Like if you're working your butt off somewhere and you're handing your money over, it's going somewhere and somebody's managing it. And so it's either there or it isn't there. And you need to know, this is the whole point of financial education. This is why we teach it. Because I think a lot of people, even in my own family, work their butts off and then they turn their money over into these pensions and then they get managed. But they also, those pensions, I'm not saying some of them are corrupt, I'm sure, you know, there's been fraud and all that kind of stuff around it. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is where they're investing is important. So if they're primarily in retail, office, and malls, it's going to be a problem, right? Or in something else that is speculative, for example. So those money managers are making big decisions with other people's money, OPM, and you know all these folks that are contributing into their paycheck. So these pensions, and we've already seen it. I mean, all you can Google this, lost pensions, and you know you'll see there's been a ton of mismanaged pensions. A ton of people have retired after all these years, and those pensions are gone or not even close to what they thought.
Yeah, wow. That's going to be a tough one. And the governments pretty much everywhere are broke. So, you know, they might pay, you know, some sort of Social Security or whatever it's called in their country, but it's going to be in dollars that are worth less than people expect, I think.
I actually think that's going to be one of the things that happens in the next 10 years, Jason. You know, as you pack this stuff together, guys, the revenue from these cities or these states, as an example, come from the taxpayers, right? And so as they move around and as they mismanage or expenses go up, and we've seen it. We've seen cities file bankruptcies, right? Bankruptcy, we've seen it. I remember back in the day, there was some cities around Detroit, some cities in Connecticut.
In California, like Vallejo, California, I think. Yeah.
So I think that's the next thing we're going to see. We have to. I mean, as people move out of those areas and they stop paying things, what else is going to happen? It's just simple math.
The sales tax revenue in these urban areas is just going to completely dry up. I mean, we had a whole summer and fall of riots in downtown everywhere. Okay, basically, almost in every major city, you know, whether it be in Minneapolis or Philadelphia or Portland or Seattle, you know, broken windows, arson, you know, attacks on police officers, basically riots. Right. And, you know, insurance companies are not going to write insurance for businesses to reopen in those cities. And not that the businesses would even want to in the first place, but assume they did, they're not going to be able to get an insurance policy or it's going to be so expensive. Right.
Well, right. Right. So, you know, let's just pick on a city like San Francisco. Yeah. So you have all these people in these high rises that are now home. Pick a company, Salesforce, Twitter. It doesn't really matter. It's like they're not there. Right. They're not coming to work. Okay, so they're not pouring out of the elevators. They're not pouring into the coffee shops. They're not pouring into the pubs after work. They're not getting dinner after work. They're not buying breakfast or lunch during the day.
Yeah.
Or they're not taking their dry cleaning. All that stuff's going to happen. Okay, so we all know this. But what does that really mean? What that means is, as you said, those people are spending money somewhere else. And so that city, as an example, relies heavily on the property tax, the sales tax, and you know, parking fees and all the stuff, you know, all that rolls up. And so that I really believe that we're going to start to see some serious issues in some of these municipalities.
Yeah, I think so too. So, you know, with all of this talk, I mean, what do people do about it? What's the plan?
We've seen this before. So maybe not in San Francisco. You know, we've never seen negative migration out of California for as long as I can remember, but it's happening. And so I think you have to wait and let it fall out. So for me, you know, I think California is still awesome. I don't know, you know, and you know, we saw it in New York back in the early days when before Giuliani went in and kind of cleaned things up and made things more tax friendly. And there was a time when I was younger where you wouldn't want to go to New York because it was dangerous, as an example. And that all
it's dangerous again. The murder rate has skyrocketed in New York.
Yeah. Right. It's dangerous again. Chicago was already that way pre-COVID. Yep. So, you know, so what happens is, you know, the people speak, they go where they want to go based on the safety and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to make its way. And then what happens is that'll be a slow, you know, death of a thousand cut type thing. And right. then, you know, then guys like you and I will go in there and we'll start stamping up stuff again. And then the policies will change. And then, you know, so you want to wait for that to kind of work itself out. That's how real estate is.
And but Ken, I got to tell you, I think that is a very long cycle.
It very well could be. I mean, I don't disagree with you. Yeah. I think there's a lot of permanent change for sure. But hey, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind getting a penthouse in New York or maybe San Diego or you know to fly out there every once in a while. And,
if it returns to its former glory or close to it, I agree with you. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know, but I do think that the way I look at it is you got to let the tide go back out. Mm-hmm. And it's just the beginning.
Yeah, it is just the beginning in terms of that. So talking about the market in general, you know, you made some videos and look, I'll say it if you don't have to say it. When you make a video or you do some marketing, just like any media, sensationalism gets attention, right? So, you know, you made some pretty sensational videos for being such a sort of understated guy, you know, about market crashes and the end of the world. You know, what do you think now? I mean, during, you know, the thick of the pandemic, I intentionally called it plandemic, okay, by the way. You were making some pretty ominous videos and people will watch your stuff and then they'd watch my stuff and I'd constantly heard this. I heard it all the time. But Ken McElroy says the market's going to hell.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you're right. What I was trying to do was unpack what was happening at the time. Yeah. So that the prediction video that I did, it did not have any of the CARES Act issues. That wasn't even a thing. Yeah. And so that was kind of pre that. And so what happened was after that video, okay, can't evict people, you know, we're going to forbear mortgages. And then they kicked it down the road. And so I still do believe, Jason, that this is all being propped up right now by the Fed primarily. So I think it's just prolonged because
they always kick the can down the road. There's no question. The problem is that, you know, it's like the question of when will the bubble pop? Well, you know, the bubble, it should have popped 8 years ago, but they can blow it up for nobody knows how long they can keep blowing it up. Right. Or how long they can kick the can down the road.
Yeah. The mistake I made was not thinking that the Fed was going to come in at, you know, the trillions of dollars that it has. I didn't think we were going to go to 7 trillion.
You didn't think we would print 25 or 30 or 35% of all the money printed in the last 100 years in 1 year?
that one I missed.
You didn't imagine that one, huh?
They're gonna do it again. You know, they're gonna do it again because we're not out of this.
It's
being propped up right now and people need the money. I don't dispute that. The businesses need it, the people need it. Nobody wants to evict anybody. Nobody wants to lose anything. But people are right now, I think they're running out of savings. They're running out of reserves. Doesn't matter if you're a homeowner or a business owner. Both are happening. I'm seeing it all over the place. And so, I mean, just there's a lot of big companies that file bankruptcy.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. And big names. Yep. You know, Hertz, Macy's. I mean, think about these companies, Neiman Marcus, companies that have been around our whole lifetime. And so,
but going back to like creative destruction, my favorite economist, Joseph Schumpeter, I mean, those companies had to go anyway, right? They were, Macy's and Needless Markup.
Yeah, I know.
Those companies, they should have gone out 20 years ago. They were way past their time. This is the problem, you know, folks, like, and Ken, comment on this, you know, but like, you notice all these sort of zombie businesses, right? They're just these companies that were really big a long time ago, and they have so much cash and sort of this momentum that kind of keeps them around for decades longer than they really should be around, right?
And yeah, we saw it with Sears and Kmart. So yeah. I agree with you on the department store stuff and direct to consumer stuff, but there are other big companies that are also, you know, apparel brands, restaurant chains like California Pizza Kitchen.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Hertz, of course, is a rental park place. And so, you know, I think you're going to start to see more of that, Jason, especially we're not out of the woods yet.
Oh, no, I agree with you. There's more to come. No question. And who knows how long they're going to keep parts of the economy locked up, you know, and if you put on your tinfoil hat, some would say this is completely intentional to destroy, you know, the middle class. A lot of these, you know, small business people are Trump supporters. So, you know, and if you look at it's the Democrat jurisdictions where the biggest lockdowns are, and then the Republican ones are open. Like I'm in Florida. It's like people say, what's it like there? And what's like, it's just normal.
Yeah,
like, the only thing is you got to wear a mask in the grocery store. That's the only part of my life that's different. That's it. You know, in Florida,
same thing in Arizona. Yeah. Even though we turned blue, basically red before that, but I agree. I don't know. You know, I'm not as much as a conspiracy guy.
If we were talking to Kiyosaki, he would say that.
Oh, Robert, for sure. But
yeah,
but I think it's just, it is what it is. I think things are going to unravel. I still believe there's going to be a crash, Jason. I just think it's being propped up with money, which is going to create inflation. And I think that's why we've got the run on Bitcoin. Because I talked to George Gammon the other day. We had him on my show. You know, he said, and Anthem Blanchard, too. You know,
I know Anthem. I didn't know you knew Anthem. That's a small world.
Anthem. Yeah. I said, why? He said, people are... They're just concerned about their own savings.
Yeah, absolutely. And they want sound money. They want to know that they can keep something and it's going to be worth something in the future. But who knows if that's going to be Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is like a roller coaster.
I know.
Absolutely crazy. Ken, I got a theory I want to run by you, and, you know, we'll wrap it up, I guess. But check out this theory. Okay, so you're talking about how, you know, there's more to come. And I do agree with you on that. There's definitely going to be certain parts of the economy they're in for, you know, there's a lot more pain to come. So we got to prepare for that. But tell me what you think about this theory. We've got tens of millions of people that are either refinancing or purchasing homes with literally the lowest interest rates in, and, you know, George talks about this, 5,000 years. They actually have statistics back to ancient Egypt on interest rates, if people can believe that. But forget about 5,000 years. Certainly they're the lowest interest rates in 100 years or in, you know, since the 70s or whatever you want, right? They're low. I mean, mortgages are insanely cheap, arguably negative interest rates in real terms. You're getting paid to borrow the money. Okay. So you got all these people that have these killer mortgages and the mortgage is not movable. So what I think is going to happen, you know, 3 years, 5 years, 7, 10 years from now, is we're going to have this constraint on housing supply because nobody's going to let go of their houses. They're either going to, number one, they're going to add on, they're going to do an addition, they're going to do, you know, they're going to do improvements, they're going to do new landscaping, they're going to fix up their house and keep it and stay, or they're going to keep it as a rental. But they're not going to let go of that mortgage because it's such a good deal. And I think that's going to really constrain housing supply in the future. And I think that's going to have this effect of keeping prices elevated. What do you think?
I actually agree with you. I think that I know that that is a reason that a lot of people will not make a decision to buy somewhere else would be obviously higher interest rates. And I think that's where you were kind of heading with that, because they're at all-time lows. And that's always, whenever rates go up, or, you know, maybe their payment is going to go up because of the rising price of a home, as an example, somewhere else, then that's a constraint and a big decision. If somebody's going to move somewhere and their mortgage is going to be $1,000 more, then they very well may could decide to stay where they are.
Yeah, or keep it as a rental. And you know how I thought of that? Because low interest rates pervert the market. They distort it. And it's just like rent control. I've got this guy that works for us. He's been with us for several years. And he and his wife have a rent-controlled place in San Francisco. And they got in there in like 1997. And Ken, they've got such a great deal, they cannot move. They want to move. They don't like their place anymore. They'd like to move. But there is no way they can give that deal up, that rent-controlled place. They're paying $2,400 a month for a place that's worth like $2 million. And the same will happen with these super cheap mortgages. People just won't want to give them up. It's like a rent-controlled apartment, you know?
Yeah, it's the same concept. So yeah. You're absolutely right. That will definitely make some people stay. It will be interest rates, as you know, drive consumer spending all over the place, and whether it's a mortgage or a car or a, you know, something that they finance, you know, like a TV or something that they buy. So the interest rates are something to watch, and I think that if they go up, it does tend to keep people in place.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting future for sure. What else would you like people to know as you wrap it up? And please give out your website. You know, I got that link from your assistant, but I don't have it handy. So do you have it? It's just got my name at the end, I know.
Yeah. Just, obviously go to kenmacroy.com. You know, Jason Hartman is the word.
So it's just kenmacroy.com/Jason Hartman, right?
Yep. Jason Hartman. Okay. And that's one way. Obviously the YouTube channel has been fun. You know, we post a video every week, and then those are the two best places to reach me and to learn more.
Awesome. Good stuff. So that's kenmacroy.com/Jason Hartman. And Ken, any closing thoughts, anything you want people to know? Thank you for joining us. Just wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of fear out there, and there's a lot of fear in the media, you know, with everything that's happening, and rightly so, with COVID and the pandemic and all of those things. And so you can absolutely positively tend to focus on the defaults, the business closures, you know, the deaths, the COVID numbers, and you should know those things. But there's this flip side to it. And that is, you know, if stay objective and start to take a look at, you know, when people are moving from somewhere, as an example, where are they moving to? Because it's creating bubbles in other areas. So some areas might be getting depressed with low occupancy and negative rent growth and low values and business closures. But other areas, people are moving around. And so there's tremendous opportunity out there if you just choose to look for it.
Good stuff. Good advice. Ken McElroy, thank you again, and happy investing.
Yeah, Jason. Great. Always great to see you.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.